Welcome to the MHI CEO Network Podcast. Here we dive into the unique and untold stories from material handling, logistics, and supply chain leaders. Stories that will challenge and empower you to take advantage of opportunities, weather disruptions, and lead your company into a future of success and growth. Here's your host, the CEO Whisperer and President of Ovation Leadership, Steve Rigi.
Hello, everyone. On today's show, we're going to hear from the Chief Supply Chain Officer for Barnes & Noble, Annette Danik-Akey. Annette has worked in the supply chain and logistics in the publishing industry for over 25 years. During this time, she has really driven operational excellence up and down the chain in her roles from industrial engineer to the Chief Supply Chain Officer. She also gives back. Some of you might know that she's on the Work Advisory Council and serves on the MHI Board of Governors. I'm very much interested in what she has to say about the topics we've got today, and I'm looking forward to hearing about her journey. Annette, welcome to the conversation. Let's explore your journey to leadership. Take us back to the beginning and tell us what really sparked your interest in supply chain and how did you find your way into the publishing industry?
Hi, Steve, and thank you for having me on your show. Happy to be the inaugural guest for you. Been in the industry, right, as you said, over 25 years, so I go back a while. So if I go back to the beginning, you know how people say go with the flow, right? You're supposed to go with the flow in life. I've gone with the flow. So if I go back into my career, I was always good with math and science. I picked Bradley University because it had a program that said, we can help you with what your degree should be. So I took a test and it said, you should either be an industrial engineer or an accountant. And I said, okay, I'll be an industrial engineer because I had to go meet both people. And I think they were right on the money because, well, not maybe accounting, but finance. Those are kind of my two passions still. And so I went with the flow. I became an industrial engineer, graduated college, decided to go get my master's degree. And I thought, well, maybe I'll be a teacher. Maybe I'll go get my master's and PhD. So I was on my path there. But in between that, I had an internship at a retail company, Sears Logistics. Yeah, I know, right? The brand that really isn't a brand anymore. But I had a really great internship that was around quality leadership. And I had a fantastic summer. I went and got my master's. I was actually doing my PhD. So I started my PhD, and then my boss at Sears Logistics called me up and said, hey, Annette, we're going to roll out that quality leadership program across all of our 7 retail distribution centers. And there were 7 of them, and each one had like 1,000 people. So what did I do, Steve?
Went with the flow.
I went with the flow. So I said, okay, yeah, I'll go back and get my PhD some other time. And I went with the flow, and I went where I wanted to go in that current too. I wanted to go in that current. So I went and I did that for about 1.5 years, and I taught quality leadership to 7 very large million square foot plus facilities that had 1,000 people or more. And at that point, as I was meeting everyone and teaching, I was in a distribution center. I started learning about distribution centers, and there weren't exactly industrial engineers inside distribution centers at that point. They were in manufacturing facilities, but not necessarily in distribution centers. I wanted to go work in one of those distribution centers, right? Because I'd been teaching them quality leadership. I went to my boss. So here's a piece of advice. If you want to do something in your career, don't just tell your boss, like tell everyone. Tell everyone what you want to do. So one person I work with, Scott Hines, he is still a mentor and a friend of mine. He's at JD Sports right now in charge of supply chain there. He said, Annette, I don't have a receiving manager for second shift in our Illinois facility. And would you want to come do an internship, a 3-month over the fall season? And I said, yes, I would love to do that. So back in that day, because Steve, I may look young, but it was in the 90s, mid 90s. I created my own internship. I worked in that facility. And someone who I worked with, who was teaching with me in our corporate group, he came down and saw me one day. And he said, Annette, you really like being in charge of people. Like, I can see this energy in you. I thought, oh. And I said, you know, that's my next step. I'm going to be in charge of one of these big distribution centers. And then I got a recruiter who called me and said, hey, there's this book publisher and they need someone to help them. They're putting in a new enterprise resource and enterprise system, a new warehouse management system. And so what do you think I did, Steve?
Went with the flow.
I went with the flow. So I said, you know what? And the one thing that I've loved ever since I was a small child is I love reading books. So it was a small book publisher and they needed help with a lot of different things. And the thing that I tell people when I mentor them is I say, if you go work at a big company, chances are you'll learn a lot and you'll get one assignment and you'll know that really in depth. If you go to a smaller company, you'll get to do a lot. You'll get to become an expert in lots of different things. And so that's what I wanted at that point in my career. I had done the 2 years. I said, I want to learn it all now. So it was a great opportunity for me to go to a small company. And when I started there, we had 6,000 titles. So 6,000 SKUs. And when I left, we had over 150,000 SKUs. So we grew that much. So I kind of grew as the company grew. And so I always say to people, like, take a chance on a small company too, because maybe they don't have a name, but they have a growth plan and you can learn a lot going somewhere like that. And then recently, never thought I'd leave Penguin Random House, but I got a great opportunity to come to Barnes & Noble and they're growing as well. So I wanted to come be part of that. So I kind of came back to retail. So I was started retail, went into publishing, came back to retail.
It's an amazing story. You know, before you came to Barnes & Noble, you spent several years at Penguin Random House, as you alluded to, but you spent a couple of years in Europe. I think we'd be interested in hearing how that really shaped your leadership style.
Most overseas opportunities happen when you're in the start of your career. So I was very fortunate to be able to go just a few years ago and work in England. Now, in England, they obviously still speak English. So that was good. It gave me a great admiration for anyone who is willing to go work in a different country because the culture, the norms, everything is slightly different. And so it makes you challenge your assumptions. It actually helped me because I realized my base leadership tenets and philosophy. I didn't have that team. I didn't have the people to go back on. If anyone ever has an opportunity to go work somewhere else in another country or even another state, I would say go do it because you will learn so much. I learned so much just from being somewhere different.
I remember sitting next to you at one of the MHI board meetings and you had talked about the travels, I think, the day prior to the board meeting and how quickly you're going to turn around. And it's really a huge commitment to do what you did, but the payback seems really, really, really important. You know, speaking of the MHI board and the Work Advisory Council, you've always been very active on those. So how do they shape your view of the industry collaboration, but also what did you do to give back, how you shared back with those other council members and board members?
First off, I have to give credit to a longtime mentor, Bob Kennedy. And I was on some volunteer boards in my local community. So I had a local community college and I was on the board for YMCA, but I hadn't been doing much with industry groups. And so he said to me, Annette, you should speak at a conference. You should participate. And I was like, oh, that's just another thing. I don't know if I have time. But you know what? You find time in your schedule if something's important. And so I started in either 2011 or 2012. I started slow. And then I always tell people, you in a volunteer organization, if you do well and you contribute, then you get promoted. I kept getting promoted in the volunteer space. You can meet someone from another company and you can share with them. But when you're doing something for the larger industry, like creating the work fundamentals and our training and training programs, or we're looking at right sustainability programs for MHI members. When you're doing that with other people, there's a different type of bond. And so you kind of cut through things really quickly, and it's then easy to talk to that person and share best practices and ideas. So I've gotten more out of volunteering than I originally thought, right? Where I said, oh, I don't have time for that. Now I would say, of course I have time for that. And I can't not do that because that's so important to me. And if you ever, right, to be a leader, right? I'm going to differentiate leadership from management, but for to be a leader, to really test your leadership abilities and your ability to set vision, go work at a volunteer organization because no one reports to you. So they don't have to do what you say, right? You work somewhere and they will kind of have to do what you say if you're the boss, right? Or they have to have a good reason. But when you work at a volunteer organization, you have to create a vision and you have to get people aligned and get everyone on board. And that's much harder. So whether it's an industry or whether it's anything in your community, I always tell people use that as an opportunity to test your leadership and your vision setting.
And that's really an interesting story. And I know one of the signatures of your style that I've always appreciated is not only to offer your recommendations and your insights, but this great curiosity that you have in your role on a board or an advisory council. And that makes me also think of this flow that you've experienced in these 25 years. There have got to be a couple of principles of leadership that have stayed constant throughout your career that have guided you. Can you give me one or two of those that have stayed constant?
It's knowing myself, knowing what I'm good at, right? Where I took a test and it said, here, you should go do this. So knowing yourself and being curious and learning, always learning to be a good teacher, right? So I was going to be a professor. And actually, a few years ago, I was an adjunct at Towson University, and I taught principles of operations management for 6 terms, which was fantastic because as a teacher, you actually learn. I actually learned more than I think the students that I taught. But I think it's important to continue to learn and to, you know, however that is, read, take classes, do certifications. And so it's something that I've always been doing. I mean, give me a leadership book and I've probably read it. You and I have had lots of conversations about different books, but always be doing that. Always learn.
Well, that curiosity leads me to one of my favorite questions I like to ask leaders when I work with them. And it's about what happens at night. And it's been said that real rare leadership starts after midnight. And it's that insomnia that leaders get where they wake up in the middle of the night and things are just in their mind that they cannot escape. So tell me a little bit about some of the big picture risks or the unknowns in today's industry in the supply chain environment that keeps you awake at night.
This is an interesting one because I've learned what technique, I don't know where I heard it, but it said, before you go to bed at night, write down what you're worried about. Have you ever done that, Steve?
Well, I've woken up saying, what did I start worrying about? So I got to start to do this before I go to bed.
You write down what you're worried about. And then when you wake up in the morning, you kind of have an answer. It actually kind of works. So that's a kind of a practice that I do. So I don't necessarily, maybe I'm different than most people, but I don't always wake up if there's something bothering me. If I write it down and then I'll sleep through it and come up with an answer in the morning. But I notice when I'm not learning and I'm not being challenged, is when I sleep through the night. Like if I'm not growing and learning, that's actually when I sleep. So I know I actually like waking up at night because then I'm like, oh, it's actually something else that came up. So it's not exactly a worry, but it's an excitement that gets me up. So if that makes sense.
It does. And it's that weight of decisions. For example, sometimes it's not about starting a new process or a new project, but it's maybe decisions that you've made or about to make that affect a lot of employees. Because in your role, you have a lot of employees who depend on you for your leadership. Do those ever keep you awake at night?
I would say not really. And I would say because, look, there's sometimes you have to make hard decisions. And I guess maybe there was a part in my career where maybe we overbuilt and had too many people. And in like 2006, I'll never forget, we had to do some downsizing. See, as long as you can do that with compassion and do that in like say the right way, because you have to make adjustments as a leader and as an organization to put the organization on the right path. as long as you can do that, I mean, maybe it weighs a little bit, but not like you have to have empathy and you have to have that people side.
Yeah. So even though you have this enormous responsibility in this growing career, you do have a fascinating list of things that you like to be involved in away from work. So how do you turn it off from work and turn on the personal and turn the work back on? How do you control those emotional states of life?
I have to have something. I really like what I do. I always thinking about work. So at some point I realized I had to have some hobbies that really like would really pull me away so that I would stop thinking about work. So at one point my husband and I actually started an organic farm. So I grew a lot of vegetables and I had a small community supported agriculture. So I grew vegetables for 20 people. So that pulled me away definitely because I had tasks I had to do. Or I love reading. I love reading. And I think just curling up with a book, that's what I've been doing recently. That kind of pulls me away as well.
That's really neat. So sometimes when I'm finding myself in those sleepless moments, I fall back on things that ground me as a leader. And there's probably three. I focus on how am I trusting people and having people trust me? What am I doing that I'm passionate about that I can share with other people? And am I really being selfless in the style that I lead other people? So is there one or two things that really keeps you grounded as a leader?
I would say being compassionate and being there for others and listening is definitely what kind of keeps me grounded. And knowing that you can have ups and downs. So you can have a day where you're like, oh, I am great. I am awesome. And then the next day, something can happen and you're like, oh, I did not do that well. You can risk beating yourself up that I didn't get that right. But I always just say, like, what I say to myself is, okay, just let it get through the night. Okay. Manage yourself. It's all going to be fine. And then when you sleep through it the next day, it's like it's gone. And it's ups and downs and ups and downs. And I had a lot of those when I went to go work in England because it was just so new and so different. And so one day would be great. The next day, oh, the next day up. So it's a little bit of a roller coaster. And I had to learn, kind of figured it out myself and said, okay, if I can just make it through and get to the next day, there's going to be the good day. So that's what I would say to people. Just keep going, put one foot in front of the other. And I guarantee the next day you're like, oh, now I'm great.
You've mentioned a lot of things in your answers that you've said, and here's my advice to someone or when I work with someone. So obviously you really treasure your interaction with other people, which brings me to the thought about inspiration and being inspired and inspiring other people. And I think it's central to leadership because it fuels us. It fuels energy and it fuels action. And it becomes the key to unlocking potential in ourselves and other people. So share with everybody how you have been inspiring others throughout your career.
That's a hard question to ask because if I look at myself, I would think, okay, well, how am I inspiring to someone, right? So maybe that little bit of that self-doubt or like, well, who am I that I'm going to inspire someone else? But people have told me that. And I think it's just listening and maybe saying, you got this, or supporting someone, or kind of even saying, well, here's a few steps, or how would you map out the steps? Like, take me through them. Like, walk me through the steps that you would go through. So just even recently, there was someone at the work conference just this past week. And she said to me, I reached out to you. And just on LinkedIn, you agreed to talk to me. I said, well, sure. Like, I agreed to talk to her because she wanted to do a presentation. And I helped her through the presentation. And now she's been promoted in the volunteer organization. So it was great for me because I was able to inspire her to be able to then give back as well. So it kind of made me feel like very cool.
Got a collection of words that I call inspire words that people have inspired me with a word. So for example, they've inspired me with a word like loyalty or a word like trust. So give me a word or maybe a two or three word phrase that inspires you that I can add to my list.
I would say generous.
Generous.
Being generous with your time, just listening, or generous with giving back. That's a word that I like.
So tell us a story of a moment that you can share when you saw your leadership really empower somebody by your being generous with them?
I'm probably a little nervous to say this because then I'll get LinkedIn requests. But every once in a while, I'll get someone on LinkedIn, a student, right? Maybe from Purdue or, you know, alma mater or something, you know, who will say, oh, I saw your LinkedIn profile and I'm really interested in X. Would you be willing to talk to me? And every once in a while, there's something that just catches my eye and I'm like, okay, I will give an hour of time to talk to someone. So I've done that. And so there's a woman, she was interested in the publishing world. And so I talked with her and now she's got a job in the publishing arena. So I've been fortunate with mentors that I've had. So I feel like if someone's going to reach out to me, then I'm willing to dedicate a couple hours each week to help mentor back.
It's always interesting to think of forks in the road that we've had in our lives, and we made one decision, could have made another decision. You go back and you say, gee, what if I had taken that other path? I think for you, all of the paths you've taken still come back to that, how can I give generously to people? How can I teach them? How can I encourage them? How I can increase and answer their curiosity? I think that's fascinating that everything you've done, you've come back to some of those core principles of yours.
It's the teaching. One of the nicest things that I got when I moved from Penguin Random House to Barnes & Noble is someone gave me a little teacher's apple and said, Annette, you know, best teacher. So I thought, so I did become a professor in a sense.
Annette, speaking of inspiration and inspiring others, there's got to be one leadership lesson that you have tried to pass on to other people from the next generation of those emerging leaders. Can you tell us about one of those?
Yep. And anyone who I've worked with kind of knows this. It's leadership action number one, use positive reinforcement. It's amazing how as you become a leader, people listen to you as you go up into an organization. So a little positive reinforcement, it's amazing. A thank you goes a long way. So at one point in my career, I actually said, you know what? I'm going to say thank you to three people every week. And I just had a little checkoff list. Now I don't need that list anymore, but use positive reinforcement.
That's really interesting. I talk a lot about charisma, positive and negative charisma, because I think sometimes leaders don't understand the unintentional charisma they have when they walk into a room or when they talk to other people and how they really want to be listening to them. And so it's important that you have that awareness of, my gosh, what I'm sharing with somebody right now could be mind-changing for them. And I think those are important lessons for you to share with them. Thank you very much. Charisma and passing it on and being positive. Well, Annette, on this wild ride we're on as leaders, sometimes we get distracted and we need to become grounded again. So what brings you back to the center and keeps you grounded and away from all of the pressure that can become overwhelming?
So Steve, we talked about that. I've always been a reader. So if there's, and there's going to be days that are up and there's days going to be down. So doing something that brings you back to who you are, and I'm a reader. So if there's a day that's good or bad, I'll grab a book, read a chapter, maybe something from, you know, especially on a day where maybe it's not a great day where I'm like, oh, what did I do today? You know, because I'm thinking about it. I'll go back to a book that's my favorite and maybe a leadership book and say, okay, let me go back to this chapter and read about it. So definitely reading keeps me grounded.
Well, you know, that answer begs a follow-up question. You've got to share with everybody at least one book that you recommend they read.
Gosh, that's such a hard question. But the one that I love the most is Ikigai. It's based on, it's a Japanese word. And basically it is do what you love, do what the world needs, do what you can get paid for, and do what you're good at. So if you can find something with all those circles, then you're going to lead a happy life. And I would say that that's what I found. I found my Ikigai.
Thank you. I'm off to Barnes & Noble tonight.
Excellent.
Well, Annette, it's that time of the day. We're going to play one of your favorite games from some of the MHI meetings we've been at called the Envelope Game, but we have an online version. We're going to ask you to spin the wheel, and each color on the wheel is going to correspond to a leadership question that you've loved to answer in the past. So, Annette, spin the wheel.
Okay, I'm spinning.
And we are landing on blue.
Beautiful.
So here's the question, Annette, and here's how it works. I'll read the question, and you can make one of two choices. You can answer the question, and we'll chat about it, or you can pass, and it'll go to the person we interview in our next podcast to open up their session. But then you're going to have to spin the wheel again, and then you'll be forced to answer the next question. So here's the blue question. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Are there specific decision-making processes or tools that you believe would enhance our ability to align our thinking and approach to solving organizational challenges?
I think I will answer that one.
Great. All right.
Okay, Steve, that's a really great question. And one of the things that I've been exposed to, and really I started studying this in about 2008, are some of the decision-making tools that are in Theory of Constraints. And Ellie Goldratt wrote a book that was very famous called The Goal. And then he wrote some follow-up books. There's a bunch of thinking processes that allow you to go through what are the constraints in an organization. And then how can you look at those? Because sometimes the answer is actually simple, because we think that organizations are complex, which of course they are. But sometimes the answer is very simple. And I can tell you that from a supply chain standpoint, that sometimes you think that you have these opposing different views, but as you look to it, your root cause is, if we could just work on being a little bit faster, then that would solve this, 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 this. So I really like the theory of constraints thinking tools.
I love that. It's spoken as someone who reads a lot of books, that you would answer the question by going back to a book that you read. That's really amazing. This has been a fabulous interview with you, Annette, and I've really appreciated it. We've discussed really some important things about your going with the flow. And you know, we talked about your leadership journey. We talked about what keeps you awake at night and how you prepare for that by writing down your list ahead of time. And also what inspires you and how you inspire others, especially emerging leaders who look for you and your generosity. So thank you so much for all of your insights and all things you had to say. And we're going to look for our listeners to come back again at our next discussion on the MHI CEO Network podcast.
This has been the MHI CEO Network podcast. Don't forget to subscribe for more inspirational stories from material handling, logistics, and supply chain leaders.